In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Finding information and the truth is complicated, and that is especially so at the intersection of government and policy and corporations and consumers who are willing to stand up to them. Given that large corporations are rightfully concerned about litigation and further lawsuits should they admit fault, they are not exactly known for going public about potential problems. And given that corporations are often working on contract for and doing the will of big government, all too often government is complicit and helping and hoping that things remain hidden when there are problems. And given that every day people trying to raise awareness, like grassroots consumer advocacy groups, do not have big money behind them, they are often dismissed as non-experts. As such, the unreliable and untrustworthy media, which used to stand up to big government and big corporations, all too often dismiss activist claims and treat them as conspiracy theorists. As we try to untangle the Los Angeles fires, you can expect an awful lot of people trying to cover their collective behinds. To recap, leading up to the Los Angeles fires, they had warnings about the Santa Ana winds combined with existing conditions literally days before they started. And the weeks before the fires, the fire department had also warned of dangerous staffing problems due to millions of dollars slashed from their personnel and equipment budgets. More than 100 fire trucks had been sidelined with various mechanical problems. Aside from natural causes, among its massive homeless population, and estimates are between 40 to 60,000 homeless there in Los Angeles, both accidental fires from cooking or to keep warm and intentional arson are well-known and common problems in Los Angeles. Meth heads are especially known for their arson. Given the wind and the conditions, California and Los Angeles leadership knew fires were coming and yet did nothing. When they should have been pre-positioning fire response crews and other assets and staking out vulnerable areas around the city and near forests. But the problems did not start just a few days before the fire started, or even weeks or months. This was years in the making, including and especially years of environmental neglect, on the one hand believing that climate change is real, that the earth is getting hotter and drier, but on the other hand doing nothing about it, especially little or no forest management, because their predominant belief is that mankind is the problem and that nature should be left alone. And so they took billions for climate change under false pretenses, but did nothing useful or practical with it to help actually improve the environment, and certainly nothing to mitigate fire danger. But they did flush millions of acres feet of water out of the reservoirs down into the ocean to save a delta smelt. And after the fires are finally put out, the problems will continue to remain given the current leadership in Los Angeles and in California and their unwillingness to admit fault in their response to the fire, and certainly not admit the problems with their environmental policies and ideology, because policies and ideology have real-world consequences. And in this case, they made things much, much worse. To talk about all that and much more, I'd like to welcome Dr. Bonner Cohen back to the show. He is a senior policy analyst at CFACT. He is an internationally recognized expert on natural resources, energy, the environment, and property rights. Dr. Bonner, Dr. Cohen, it's great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here.
So there is an awful lot to talk about on the environmental front, but in preparing for the show, it really struck me how providential it is to have Trump coming into office right now. He is not only going to hopefully restore some common sense on to so much of America, including and perhaps especially so on the environmental front, and it's at a time that we are seeing the stupidity and insanity of the far-left environmental policies on full display for the whole world to see with Gavin Newsom and the Los Angeles fires. I mean, talk about a battle of ideologies. Here it is.
Common sense, of course, is what has been conspicuously lacking in California going back decades.
Yes.
Now, Southern California, where the fires broke out, the climate there is arid. Humidity this time of year, and a good time of the year, is sometimes as low as 10%. Mm. And the area is also subject to strong southwesterly winds. These are called the Santa Ana winds. Now, they're strong, but sometimes they are very strong. You would think that knowing all of this, preparations would have been made to prevent wildfires, not from starting, because that can happen. A bolt of lightning, a carelessly tossed cigarette, a homeless person doing something stupid, or whatever. But at least to keep it from spreading, common sense things such as in forested areas, removing dead and diseased trees along with brush, that's kindling. Removing, creating fire breaks, thereby protecting communities from the spread of fire, if nothing else, slowing down the spread of fire. Given that the area in Southern California is arid and water has been a problem there for a long, long time, you would also think that California would have built more reservoirs, a place to store water when it's needed. Not a single reservoir has been built in California since 1978. Never mind that the population there, irrespective of wildfires, has grown by the millions and millions and millions, meaning that there is greater demand for the water. Those reservoirs have not been built. Some of those reservoirs are bone dry. It turns out that California, last year, 2024, had an exceptionally large amount of precipitation. Snow in the mountains, rain elsewhere. That water should have been stored. That water was not stored. A lot of it just ran off in the Pacific Ocean or was diverted to the Pacific Ocean to save something called the Delta Smelt,
yes.
A 3-inch long fish that, as far as marine biologists know, is already extinct. So
well,
that,
if I could interrupt for a second there, you had mentioned that they haven't built any new reservoirs in decades. Well, in 2014, California voters passed Proposition 1, which had directed billions of dollars for infrastructure to build water storage and reservoirs. And over 10 years later, not a single reservoir has been completed.
Not a single reservoir. You're seeing the same thing. Well, remember their high-speed rail project that has dragged on for decades and decades and decades simply because they can't get the proper permits. The bureaucracies there are completely self-defeating when it comes to getting anything done. So, yes, the voters approved funding for reservoirs. Those reservoirs, 12 years later, the ground hasn't been broken. They have done absolutely nothing.
No, absolutely not. So you had mentioned forest management. Can we definitely rule one thing out, is that did the fires happen because there was too much forest management?
There was terrible forest management. One of the things that forestry people who really know their business pay close attention to, don't allow for the buildup of things that can spread fires in forestry. That's why dead and diseased trees and brush are removed. That's why you carry out occasional controlled burns, just to make sure that you get rid of the kindling that is there and keep these things from becoming tinderboxes, which is exactly what they have become.
Yes, absolutely. You know, so many of those environmentalists want to pretend that these trees just sit there, stand there looking beautiful. Well, they shed branches throughout their entire lifetime. And if you don't pick those up, it's literally tens of millions of sticks of kindling that are ready to grow up. So, all right, it is time for a break. Everyone stay with us. Los Angeles and California did so many things wrong leading up to those fires. We'll continue that discussion with Dr. Bonner Cohen. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today about the Los Angeles fires and a lot of the environmental nonsense and policies that led up to that and certainly made things worse. And we're doing that with Dr. Bonner Cohen. He is a senior policy analyst at CFACT. You can find out more about the fantastic work they do at CFACT. That's CFACT.org. And so in that last break there, we were talking about the lack of forest management there. There were so many things that have gone wrong. with these environmental policies and stuff. Is there anything in particular that you could zero in on that you would say maybe caused the most amount of damage, or is it just really a confluence of all of these?
I think it was a combination of so many sins of commission and omission. One of the things that California and Los Angeles officials did do, which was completely predictable, is take absolutely no responsibility whatsoever for their actions. The tragedy there had hardly unfolded when, sure enough, they blamed climate change for all the destruction and loss of life that took place. Now, as we pointed out, Southern California does have a unique climate. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with the movie Chinatown. Sorry, Faye Dunaway, Jack Nicholson, set in the Los Angeles of 1930s. There's a wonderful description of the city of Los Angeles there and the environment in which it developed. Los Angeles is located in a desert that goes up to the ocean. That has always been the case. This is a city set in a desert. The climate there has not changed at all. It's been remarkably constant going back centuries. In the year 1542, Spanish explorer Juan Cadillo dropped anchor in what is now Los Angeles Bay. He looked up and he saw smoke over the mountains. And he noted that the smoke, of course, was coming from wildfires, which were spreading rapidly thanks to the powerful winds. Those were the winds that we now know and we now call the Santa Ana winds. That was almost 500 years ago, and by the way, was in the midst of what we call the Little Ice Age. So the fires that were spreading then were not being caused by SUVs, 18-wheelers, or anything of that sort at all. Those were the natural conditions, and those natural conditions have not changed. What has changed are simply public policies dating back really to the 1970s, 1980s, when environmentalism became the guiding principle, later climate change, or formerly known as global warming, became the guiding principle of the resource management of the state of California. And now, the unfortunate people in Pacific Palisades and other areas in Los Angeles County are reaping the bitter harvest of the catastrophe that was imposed upon them by their rulers. And these are the people who are paying the highest taxes of any people in any state in the union, and have absolutely the worst possible. There's no public safety and complete mismanagement of natural resources.
Well, one of the things that you pointed that out about, that you pay more taxes pretty much than anybody, and I've seen people on social media complaining about that very fact. In fact, some of them were from the left side of the aisle, and they're upset that they're paying so much and seemingly getting nothing for it. And as I said in my opener there, California has gotten tens and tens of billions of dollars for climate change. So what exactly have they done with it? Because as far as I can tell, they've done nothing other than collect money.
They've collected money. They have dispersed that money to climate activists, politically well-connected climate activists around the country, around the state. They have also gotten those funds and used those funds to propagate their whole approach to combating what they would have you believe is the climate crisis. This is a state that is leading the country in electric vehicle mandates. This is a state that is leading the country in its war on fossil fuels, making the state even more increasingly dependent on intermittent, which is a polite term for unreliable, wind and solar power, putting enormous strains on an already shaky electric grid. The misallocation of resources here is absolutely breathtaking. And sadly, I see nothing, at least from the initial statements of the people in power in Sacramento and in Los Angeles. I see nothing that tells me that they are willing to admit what terrible mistakes they have made, how they need to turn things around. And believe me, if they don't turn things around, what we have seen on our TV screens the past 2 weeks is a foretaste of things to come.
Well, the insanity of this is pretty amazing, because it's like paying a gardener who does nothing. As you said, they got tens and tens of billions of dollars, probably hundreds of billions of dollars to fight climate change. But other than shuffle the money around to fill up the bank accounts of the far left, nothing's been done for the actual environment. And it'd be like paying a gardener who does nothing, doesn't water it, doesn't weed it, doesn't trim things back, no pruning, no raking up of the debris, nothing. Just let nature run its course, but demands to be paid anyway. I mean, nobody would tolerate that from their own gardener,
right.
But it's somehow okay that we're doing that with hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars. You know, you run into, I'm sure, climate changers all the time who are saying, well, places like Los Angeles are drier and hotter because of climate change. Does it ever dawn on them that if you truly believe that, you should be doing more forest management, not what they've been doing, which is nothing?
Oh, that's absolutely right. You have to work with the environment that you have. The climatological record for Los Angeles actually is very well documented. They started keeping records there in the year 1877. So they can go back and they can look at the amount of rainfall that they get. They can look at the temperatures that they have. They have to know about their winds, the Santa Ana winds, because people who live in that part of the world talk about them all the time. Now, those are the things they can't really change. But what they can do is adapt to them and try to protect the people who live there. And we're talking about millions and millions and millions of people in the greater L.A. Area to try to protect them from things that they have to know in one degree or another are going to happen. And they fail to do that.
But in talking with those climate changers, does it ever connect with them that they should be doing more, not less, if climate change is real?
That's right. Now, these people live in a bubble. They speak only with people who have been indoctrinated the way they have. Mm. They seem, with very rare exception, completely incapable of learning, not just from their mistakes, from the mistakes of others. They're sticking with the dogma, even though the dogma played no small role in the human tragedy that we have all seen the last couple of weeks.
Well, I think in talking with them, they really come across as though it's much more of a belief system than science. It's like challenging a religious belief, I think, more than anything. All right, lots more to talk about with Dr. Bonner Cohen. Coming up, we'll continue our discussion about climate change and are things about to change for climate change. And we're back. We're talking about environmental nonsense today, and especially as evidenced in the Los Angeles fires. And to do that, we're talking with Dr. Bonner Cohen. He is a senior policy analyst at CFACT and an internationally recognized expert on natural resources, energy, and the environment and property rights. And, you know, I mentioned there, going out of that last break there, that maybe things are about to change for climate change. And as evidence of that, there was an article just a couple days ago on January 14th from ABC 10 that said that California is already starting to pull back on its net zero initiatives, including its diesel truck ban and other clean air rules as Trump prepares to take office. It's astonishing how much of an environmentalism ideology depends on and is only feasible if somebody else is paying for it, namely the U.S. taxpayer. And I think this is really excellent news. I'm hoping that we're going to see some other net zero dominoes fall in other states. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think you are seeing a lot of net zero dominoes fall in the United States and also in Europe, which is actually even further along in the net zero madness than we are, with a very predictable result that Europe is undergoing deindustrialization. The German economy is contracting. Germany phased out its nuclear power. It phased out its coal power. It replaced both of them with wind and solar power. And they are finding out, which something they should have known from the very beginning, you cannot possibly power a modern economy, industrial economy, like Germany's, which is the economic engine of Europe, with intermittent wind and solar power. It can't happen. And now they are finding that out in an absolutely disastrous way. Decarbonization equals deindustrialization. That's a very simple thing, but it's absolutely true. You can see it in Germany. You can see it in Britain. You can see it now, tragically, in California, and you will see it everywhere. What is interesting, noting the change in political winds, that in addition to government, of course, you've had all sorts of very bad actors in the private sector. There is a cabal of banks. It's called the Net Zero Banking Alliance. It's an entity of the United Nations, and it was created several years ago and grew very rapidly to encompass 145 banks in 46 countries, all of which were making their pledges that they would strive for net zero emissions, and they would do so by denying credit to fossil fuel-driven industries, wow, including agriculture. Well, along came November the 5th, along came other clear evidence of what an utter disaster net zero carbon emissions is. And the American members of that climate cartel, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, every one of them, there were six of them, every one of them have now pulled out. They don't want to be on, from their standpoint, the wrong side of history. And this could also wind up being on the wrong side of business. So out with their solemn climate commitments that they were making just a couple of years ago, and now they have all turned their backs on this. So I think we are in the early stages of the collapse of the climate cartel. And that's a very good thing, because it was hopelessly corrupt, taxpayers' money being showered upon purveyors of all sorts of green energy, green products, and what have you. Political favoritism here was the driving force behind this. It is one of the many reasons that California is in the mess that it's in. New York State, on the other side of the country, very similar. People are packing their bags and getting out because they can't afford to live there any longer. They too are being taxed, and they too are being squeezed with what they were supposed to pay for energy.
Yeah. Well, you had mentioned that about the decarbonization is really about the deindustrialization of society. And it reminds me of what Maurice Strong said back at the Rio Summit in 1993, I believe it was. And he says, this is in his opening remarks, he said, quote, "We may get to the point where the only way of saving the world will be for industrialized civilization to collapse. Isn't it our responsibility to bring this about?" And that is what is driving so much of the environmental movement, the whole green energy, and all the rest. And also, to just add what you're saying there about the solar and wind, it just can't work without battery storage, because obviously when you need light at nighttime, solar isn't going to work, and wind is only intermittent as well. And there was a recent study, I think it was a couple of years ago, that found that in order to build enough battery capacity to power the U.S., for just 1 week, it would cost a minimum of $100 trillion and probably closer to $600 trillion just for 1 week of storage. And so this is just never possibly going to work. I said in the opening segment there that there's been a lot of positive news, I think, about the environment. And one of that was Doug Burgum's testimony this week to the Senate as part of his confirmation hearing. It was really encouraging, because this is somebody who not only has a deep understanding of the environmental issues, but really approaches them from a business standpoint. The one troubling thing, though, about that was, and he made an awful lot of sense in most of that, but he did at one point say that he does believe that climate change is a global issue, Do you know much about Governor Burgum? I mean, is he a true climate change believer?
Yes, I can tell you a couple of things. He is someone who does not challenge the prevailing narrative of human-induced climate change. And that's a tremendous weakness on his part.
Yes.
Because he's then ever searching for solutions, maybe business-friendly or even conservative solutions to climate change, as long as he accepts a narrative. And by the way, North Dakota is full, not just of oil rigs extracting tons of oil from the Bakken Shale region in the western part of the state, but North Dakota is a big wind state. Place gets a lot of wind, a lot of wind turbines there. So a lot of the developers of wind turbines are all on the take. They put those things up not to create reliable electricity for the people of North Dakota, but rather to pocket the subsidies,
yes,
the federal subsidies, yep, that come with them. Burgum, sadly, is blind to all of this.
Yeah.
So we have to be very careful with him. Trump has made him the energy czar. I think it's not a good selection at all. A far superior choice would have been the Secretary of Energy, Chris Wright, who has challenged the whole narrative. He said, no, there's actually no scientific evidence of this whatsoever, that it is, in fact, a hoax, and it's a hoax on which an awful lot of people are making an awful lot of money.
Yes, it so sure
we
is.
Have to and keep our eyes on Mr. Burgum. He's capable of making some bad mistakes. And he's one of these people who will tell you, well, I'm for all of the above. The problem with all of the above is that wind and solar, just to cite two examples, cannot stand on their own feet, never will be able to stand on their own feet, and will have to be propped up by taxpayers from here to eternity.
Yeah, absolutely. Green energy brings a lot of problems, and could one aspect of them have actually added to the LA fires? We'll talk about that next with Dr. Bonner Combs. Stay with us. And back to the iFire Radio Show. We've been talking about the Los Angeles fires. We've been doing that with Dr. Bonner Cohen. He is an internationally recognized expert on natural resources, energy, the environment, and property rights, and also a senior policy analyst over at CFACT. You can visit them at cfact.org. We'll link that up on today's show, which is 15-03 on iSpireRadio.com. And so we've been talking about the Los Angeles fires and the policies that led up to them, which will hopefully meet a demise in the Trump administration. And I want to talk to you about one aspect that so far I have not heard people talking about that may have played, at least, you know, maybe added to or potentially added to the fires there in Los Angeles, and that's smart meters. These are something that are mandated there in Los Angeles. They're all part of the green energy revolution. And I'd actually like to start with an article that you wrote, Rising Battery Fires, Cloud Electric Vehicles Future. This is published in the Washington Times last year, January 7th. And what had originally led me to looking into these was a post on social media that said that they can very quickly the smart meters have a lithium ion battery that can very quickly go from 500 to much as 5,000, even 6,000 degrees. And that's a huge fire hazard. And looking into that, it really opened up a long rabbit trail. I know we're going to barely scratch the surface on this, probably have to have another entire show on this. But talk to us about these lithium ion batteries, because they are certainly catching on fire in the EVs.
Right. And once they do catch on fire, and they catch on fire actually fairly easily, all of a sudden you have a conflagration on your hands. They spread rapidly, and the heat these things produce is absolutely enormous. If you have a vehicle fire in a gasoline-powered car, the temperature of that fire will be 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. In an EV, that is 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and it takes 10 times the amount of water to put out a fire in an EV as it does in a gasoline-powered car. And by the way, the EV is usually completely totaled. You have to throw it away. So that is what you get when you pack. You have these packs of lithium-ion batteries powering the car. Well, these are the same kinds of batteries that are now found in so-called smart meters. These are digital meters. And where are these meters located? They're located on the sides of buildings, including houses. If these things catch fire, you're going to have the potential for real damage to the building, simply because, you know, unlike a conventional, old, good old-fashioned analog meter, these things don't divert the electricity to the ground. There's no real fire break there to keep the thing, to keep the fire from spreading into the building through wires, where it can destroy appliances, set the building on fire. In other words, what started out as a fire in the meter all of a sudden is now a fire in the building. In the case of Los Angeles, where you have these things mandated, surprise, surprise, that green policies have to be mandated, I don't doubt for a minute that they contributed to the rapid spread of the fire. This needs to be looked into and really documented, and I don't know if the state of California is capable of carrying out an objective study of this. But if it did, it wouldn't surprise me in the least that one of the contributing factors to the rapid spread of the fire there were these smart meters. There are other problems with them, but they are a real fire hazard. Now, why would anyone want to put a fire hazard on his or her home? The utilities don't really need smart meters to find out the information they need to find out, because for decades they got along with good old-fashioned
legwork
analog meters.
Yeah.
But what you have here is something that opens up a whole can of worms and has not received the attention it should have.
No, I certainly don't think so. And in case people don't know, one of the big reasons why these smart meters are out there is so that they can be tapped into by the utility company, read from a distance, and then also even shut off if people are short on their bills. But one of the things I came across is that even in the aspect of shutting them off and turning them back on again, that can lead to fires. And so this is pretty crazy that in a lot of cases, we effectively have, well, especially with Los Angeles, all of them are mandated to be smart meters. But these are kind of like ticking time bombs, it sounds like, from the research that I did. But the other aspect is, too, is that because they're wireless, they are vulnerable to hacking. And
yes.
And it's not like we don't know that China is pretty good at hacking into things. And so now literally every building in Los Angeles could potentially be hacked into by nefarious actors.
It's an example, one of several actually, where high-tech things in many respects turn out to be inferior to their low-tech predecessors.
Yes.
Because the old meters did not pose the fire hazard that the new meters do. Very quickly, if we have time, think about the Hamas attack on Israel, October 7th, 2023. The Israelis had pulled back a lot of troops from the border with Gaza and replaced that with very high-tech equipment, thinking that that could pick things up quicker. What did Hamas do? It penetrated that equipment and it disabled it. So when the attack came, the Israelis had practically no warning whatsoever. Whereas if they had had warm bodies on the border, they might have been able to limit the damage and limit the death toll. But that's what you get when you get too smart.
Yes.
And you come up with smart meters, which it turns out may not be that smart at all and can easily be penetrated by people who do not wish you well.
Yes.
I think
there was a really interesting
instrument.
And let me interrupt you there because we're up against a break, but there was a really interesting quote from a former CIA director, and we'll talk about that next with Dr. Bonner Cohen. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking today to Dr. Bonner Cohen. He is a senior policy analyst at CFACT and an internationally recognized expert on natural resources, energy, on the environment. And we've been talking about the fires in Los Angeles. And that last segment, we were examining one potential cause or even addition to the fires here in Los Angeles, smart meters. And, you know, we don't know for certain at this point that the smart meters may have played a role in that. We certainly know that no one will find out anything if no one looks. And we also know that no one will look if no one asks questions. So hopefully people will start asking questions about this. And I mentioned in that going out of that break there about the former CIA director. This is from James Woolsey. And he said what they're doing now, what they're constructing, is called a smart grid. And they're going to make it easier for you and me to call our homes on our cell phone and turn down air conditioning on a hot afternoon if we're not there. And that's great, but that may well mean that a hacker in Shanghai with his cell phone could do the same thing or worse. And a so-called smart grid that is as vulnerable as what we've got now is not smart at all. It's a really, really stupid grid. That could be a massive issue if these can be hacked into and triggered to overheat and cause fires.
Oh, yes. I think of smart meters and its cousin, the smart grid. They remind me of a bit of what in the old East Germany was called the Hausvertrauensmann, or the building informant. In each apartment building in the old East Germany had a guy who would report on people living in his building who were not hewing to the party line of the Communist Party that ran East Germany. And he would report that in exchange for which he'd get cases of beer or a little bit of money or what have you. With smart meters, you have an element of a state surveillance system, or for that matter, which may not even be your own state, it can be a foreign state, such as the aforementioned China, or a utility that is simply keeping tabs on you. You are allowing something that will allow someone who may not wish you well at all access to your home, how not only you use your energy, but the other activities you are engaged in. And what you have here, as I said, if you're interested in disrupting people's lives and in invading their privacy, one of the essentials in that is a smart meter.
Yes.
So putting aside the whole fire risk of the thing, but we don't want to put that aside because it's something that really needs to be investigated. But just look at your own rights that you may be surrendering by having one of these things in your home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right, because these have already been, you know, when they were, I remember when we were approached by our local power company, this is 10 years or more so ago, they wanted to install a smart meter. And I did a little bit of investigating, and it didn't take me very long to say absolutely not, because one of the things that was being discussed at that time was, well, the utility company could decide, well, you're using too much electricity and we'll turn off your air conditioning
or
whatnot. Yeah. And that literally
you're
just happened.
You're damaging the climate.
Yeah, well, exactly. And that literally just happened like last month in New Zealand when thousands of customers had their electricity shut off during a heat wave because there was too many people using the air conditioning. So for people to say, oh, that's all conspiracy theory, no, these sort of things happening.
No, it's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
plus,
it's
reality. Terrifying to think that these could be hacked into. I mean, just imagine setting off one house per block all across the city. And those smart meters are not just used on electricity, they're also used for gas. So these are potential time bombs, really, and quite literally so, if these can be hacked into. Yeah, you know, we're actually running up against the clock. We're going to have to leave it there for now, and I think we're going to have a whole other show about this as well. Everyone stay with us. We're going to wrap things up with Dr. Bonner Cohen, looking ahead to fixing the future. And we're back in our final segment now here on the iSpy Radio Show. We've been talking to Dr. Bonner Cohen. He is a senior policy analyst at CFACT and an internationally recognized expert on natural resources, energy, and the environment. Before we leave the notion of the smart meters, I just had one quick question here for you. In terms of the role of smart meters within the overall green energy, you know, that's where they're trying to push everybody. are they needed for that green energy transition? I mean, because of the intermittent aspects of green energies, you know, switching on and off, are those smart meters really needed?
I don't know if they're needed or not. I think the cost, not necessarily in dollars, but in every other thing, but in dollars too, of having a smart meter far exceeds whatever benefits that they may have. A smart meter can probably tell the utility how inefficient wind and solar are, but the utility should know that anyway. And so I think that if people are saying we absolutely need these things for to help promote and make renewable energy work better, well, they're not going to make renewable energy work better. They're simply going to confirm what we knew to begin with, that they're intermittent, applied term for unreliable. They're propped up by subsidies without which there wouldn't be a single wind turbine anywhere in the United States, nor any solar arrays whatsoever, none, zero, because the developers would have no incentive whatsoever to invest money in it because they wouldn't get a return on their investment. So they're propped up by mandates and they're propped up by taxpayer subsidies, and they're not there to provide people with reliable, affordable energy simply because they cannot do so.
Well, like I said, we'll definitely have to have you back about the smart meters because I think there's a lot yet to uncover with that. Forward into the future and how we fix this, we had mentioned earlier about the Doug Burgum confirmation hearings, and I'm still hopeful that he can be brought around about climate change. But there was one thing that came up that I had not heard about during that hearing was the snail darter. And this was an article by the New York Times just a week or so ago that this was a so-called endangered species that held up the development of a dam. I think it was in eastern Tennessee. And it turns out that snail darter was a completely fictional animal. There was no such thing. I mean, they were literally falsifying the science to try to stop this. And when you hear things like that about falsifying the science, I really hope, again, that you could maybe penetrate that shell of Doug Burgum, because that's entirely what climate change is. They've been known to falsify science. They certainly falsified all of the temperature, not all, but many of the temperature readings from NOAA and NASA in order to prove that there's climate change.
Yeah, if they are willing to make up a species out of whole cloth, a species that actually never existed,
right,
much of what we've seen elsewhere, where they underestimated, sometimes dramatically underestimated, the actual number of a particular species, be it a plant or an animal that existed someplace. But these things are called data errors. And they're usually acknowledged years and years after the measures have been taken to protect the particular species, which it turns out was not endangered or threatened to begin with. But the bureaucrats who run the Endangered Species Act in Washington, D.C., the Department of Interior, all have an incentive to expand the power of their agency and oversee the so-called recovery of species. That's the ESA, one of the absolutely worst acts
yes.
that was ever enacted in the United States. It actually turned landowners against the species. And if you have a species that really is endangered, then you should provide incentives for the landowner to work hard, to take measures to help the species survive and recover, rather than slapping draconian measures on the landowner, be it a farmer, a rancher, a fruit grower, or whatever, and thereby keeping that landowner from being able to earn a living. So what does a landowner do? That's the old expression. I'm sure you've heard it before. Shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Right.
eliminate the species and make sure that the wildlife people at the local state agency or the feds don't find out that you have one on your property, because it can mean your economic ruin. But those are the kinds of policies and sadly laws that are in place that have led to so much disruption and so much needless impoverishment of rural communities throughout the U.S. Think of the timber-dependent communities in the Northwest that were put out of business thanks to the spotted owl, another gigantic lie that was told 30 years ago. And so these are the kinds of things, these stories need to get out. People need to realize these things happen. If we continue to allow these things to happen, we're going to further bury ourselves.
Yeah, well, to create an era of innovation, which is what I hope a large part of the Trump administration is going to be, it requires new thinking. And when it comes to energy and energy regulations, there are far too many people who are overseeing that believe in climate change. And if you keep using the same experts who believe the same things, you'll keep getting the same answers. So I'm hoping that if we start taking away those tens of billions, really hundreds of billions and even trillions of dollars spent on climate change, maybe that will start forcing people in a different direction.
Yeah, I think that there's a distinct possibility of that happening. One of the really good things that could come is that these enormous sums of money, your taxpayer money and my taxpayer money, that is flowing into the pockets of purveyors of green energy and green products and all the green activists that are being bankrolled around the country, that money is going to be cut back. It's probably not going to be completely eliminated.
Well, it almost invariably has to be cut back. If they're at all serious about trimming the budget, that's got to be some of the first to go, because it has no benefits other than making some people
None
wealthy.
None whatsoever, unless you're one of those who's lining his pockets with it. Outside of that, nobody benefits.
Exactly right. Unfortunately, we really are up against the clock. Dr. Cohen, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
As we said, there's an awful lot yet to uncover about these smart meters, but something I should have mentioned was that there are known problems with smart meters, documented. In fact, they were believed to play a role in the 2017 Northern California fires. So, in 2017, they knew that smart meters could play a role in fires, yet bureaucrats continued to mandate their use anyway. Did smart meters play a role in the LA fires? It's at least worth asking questions, especially since we can almost guarantee that they will be mandatory in the next Los Angeles as part of the rebuilding. Anything that is mandatory is always worth questioning and standing up to, every time. There's never anything wrong with asking questions. Not answering questions, ignoring them, pretending there aren't questions, that's where the problems lie, and why too often things don't change. Which is why we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.